Very good. Okay, so this morning I'm talking about famous last wishes and famous last words. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to read a quote for you, and then they're going to bring the picture up on the board, okay? So here's the first one. See if you can guess who it is, all right? I found Rome of clay. I leave it in you of marble. I leave it in you of marble. I found Rome of clay. I leave it in you of marble. Anybody want to take a guess at that? Which one? Nope. Nope. Augustus. There you go. Got the picture on the board? Okay. All right, here's the next one. Now for some of you old-timers, this will probably be a little easier. I finally get to see Marilyn. I finally get to see Marilyn. There we go. Well, my clicker's not working. Joe DiMaggio. Did you get that? Okay. I'm going to get up off that Marilyn picture. Okay, here's the next one. I will hear in heaven. Beethoven. All right, he wrote all those symphonies, but he had perfect pitch. He could write, but he didn't need to hear it. God gave it to him in his brain. The next one, this happened on my birthday. That's a little hint. Okay. I am going to the bathroom to read. Yeah, Elvis. Those were his famous last words. His last wish. Well, we don't know if it was his last wish or not. Okay, this next guy was a Christian, got saved later in life. He was the Steph Curry of his day. Literally seconds before he died of a heart attack, he said these words, "I feel great." Anybody know who that was? Pistol Pete Maravich. He was with James Dobson of Focus on the Family. They were playing a little pickup game together. Okay, here's the next one. Tomorrow at sunrise, I shall no longer be here. This is a hard one. Made predictions. He finally got one right. It's this guy. Nostradamus. All right. You write one out of 10 times, they call you a genius. All right, here we go. Boy, this is a tough one. This guy was way too hard on himself. I have offended God and mankind because my work did not reach the quality it should have. I have offended God and mankind because my work did not reach the quality it should have. Here's a picture of him. Close. Leonardo da Vinci. Same time period. Good. Leonardo. Yeah, can you imagine that guy saying I've offended God and mankind because my work's not good enough? Man, oh man. Okay, here's the final one. I am not the least afraid to die. I'm not the least afraid to die. Here's his picture. Anybody recognize him? Charles Darwin. Charles Darwin. I'm not the least afraid to die. I wanted to put the Yoda clip in here that says, "You should be. You should be." All right. Star Wars geeks know what laughed. Everybody else looked at me like, what? All right. So today, this is a little bit heavy today. I'll just be honest with you. I'm going to share with something. I had one sermon ready to go, and then like Monday or Tuesday, the Lord said, you got to add this to it. So I'm going to do a couple of things from David's life that talk about final requests of parents and also famous last words, the most important wish that a parent would have, a parent's most important wish. So I'm going to first look at last request here in the Bible, an example of that, and then a parent's most important wish. I want to start with this. The first half of this is especially for those of you who still have living parents. I want you to listen especially. If you still have living parents, please listen closely to what I'm about to share with you today. I'm going to tell you right now, this is not targeted to any one person or any one situation that is going on. One of the most difficult things about pastoring in a church is when I just address a scripture that is right before me as it comes in the scriptures, and because I know a lot of people's personal lives or things that have happened over the last 20 years, that sometimes people say, oh, was he talking to me? Was he directing that straight at me? No, but what I always say is, like Cinderella, what? If the shoe fits, wear it, okay? So if I make eye contact with you at a certain point in this, I don't want you to think, he doesn't think I love my mother. I don't want you to think that, okay? Don't do that to yourself. I never, ever do that. I promise you, I have never in my almost 18 years here had a point that needed to be made to someone and thought premeditatively, I'm going to look right at Josh Sowers during this point because he needs to get it. And so if I'm ever looking at you and just giving it, I'm not nailing Josh. Everybody understand that? I feel like I've got to lay all these things out just so people don't leave here, oh, he doesn't think I love my parents. Okay, here we go. Let's start out with some scripture. David is returning from his exile, running from Absalom. Now he's coming back, and there was this very rich man, old man that meant very much to David. He's 80 years old. He provided David his needs while his army was fleeing and his family out into the desert from Absalom. David's coming back toward the Jordan River to cross over and head his way up to Jerusalem. And there's this 80-year-old man named Barzillai. He's a very aged man, 80 years old. And he had provided the king with food while he stayed in Mahanaim, for he was a very wealthy man. And the king said to Barzillai, come over with me, and I will provide for you with me in Jerusalem. Why don't you come up to Jerusalem and just live there with me, and I'll take care of all your needs. But Barzillai said to the king, how many years have I still to live that I should go up with the king to Jerusalem? I am this day 80 years old. Now, whenever someone 70 or older says to you how old they are, that's because they want you to listen to what they're about to say next. And not only do they want you to listen to what they're about to say next, they want you to do exactly what they've said because they're old. That's what they're saying. I've earned you listening to me by the virtue of just staying on this earth this long. Okay, I don't want anybody to mess with me. Just do what I'm an old man. I'm an old woman. Just listen to what I'm saying to you. Okay, that's when they say this, that's what they mean. He says, can I discern what is pleasant and what is not? Can your servant taste what he eats or he drinks? Can I still listen to the voice of singing men and singing women? Why then should your servant be an added burden to my lord the king? Do you understand what he's saying here? I can't see anymore. I can't hear anymore. I can't even taste food anymore. Just, I don't want to be a burden on you. Now, I say that to say that this is the way most parents feel. As they approach their latter years and they know death is coming, they don't want to be a burden. Just, King, just leave me. I don't want to be a burden on you. And then here's the next thing that they want to communicate. One, they don't want to be a burden. Two, says your servant will go over a little way over the Jordan with the king. But why should the king repay me with such reward? I don't need to move in this fancy place. Here's what I want. Please let your servant return that I may die in my own city near the grave of my father and my mother. Do you understand what Barzillai is saying here? As long as I can live in my own home, that's where I want to live. Now, I'm 80 years old, King. Just listen to me. I know you're the king. I don't want to be a burden on you. But as long as I can live in my own home, that's what I want to do. Just let me die the way I want to die. It's all I want. It's all I'm asking for. There's a 70-70-30 principle that we find along palette of care, end-of-life decisions. And here's what it is. This is in the United States. 70% of people over 75 say that they want to die at home. 70% of people over 75 say they want to die at home. But yet, 70% die somewhere else. Okay? 70% want to die at home, but yet 70% die somewhere else. That means that at least 40% aren't dying the way they want to or where they want to. And then sadly, the 30 is this. Only 30% die with a living will. That's less than one out of three. And I would say, moms and dads, this is something that Dee and I did back when we were 30 years old. We went into Kenny Hicks Law Office, and we drew up, if we pass away, here's what the kids will go here, money will go there, house goes here. We spilled all these things out. We sat down and had a discussion with our children. Here's what we want to happen in the case of our untimely death. Now, that's not even knowing and not even expecting that we would pass away. But here's the reality of it. Unless the Lord comes back and raptures us to be with him in heaven, right? All of us are going to face these decisions. All of us are going to sit down with our families and need to have a discussion as to what do we want the end of life to look like. Nobody likes to think about it. A lot of times people say, oh, I don't even want to go there. Oh, that's not going to happen, Mom. I don't want to talk about that. Listen, it is going to happen. It's a very real thing. That's what Barzillai is saying here. I know I'm going to die. Here's what I want. And so that's what we need to do. There's three things that Dr. David Kuhl says. He's an expert on end-of-life issues and palliative care. He said there are three things that aging parents need, and I'm going to share those three things with you this morning, just briefly, okay? First is they need to have a plan. And in order to have that plan, people have to be willing to sit down and say the truth. Speak the truth in love, as the Apostle Paul says. Speak the truth. What do I mean by speaking the truth? Is the aging parents have to say, here's what I would like. You just have to tell people. Now, I know that underneath that is, I don't want to be a burden to you. I get that. Okay, most parents don't want to be a burden to their kids. But at the same time, what we need to have in our families are truthful discussions. Here is the way I'd like to go out. Here's how I would like to pass away. This is important to me. And then kids, then it's your job in love to have a very truthful decision. And this is part of having a plan. Is to sit down and say, here's what we can afford to do. Because what you don't want to do is have the entire family in debt because of decisions made in the last 3 or 4 years of someone's life. Have a plan. You know, there's something very sad. I don't know about the rest of the world, but I can say in America, we've got a big problem with life. We don't like to plan when it comes to issues of life. As many as one-third of all babies are aborted. You know why? Because people didn't plan for life. That's why they do it. They didn't plan for life. And unfortunately, 40% of adults don't die the way they want to die because they also didn't have a plan. It costs money. My friend Dave Amos is here this morning. There are a number of expenses that go with burying someone. Dave works at Rollins Funeral Home. It's not free. It costs a lot of money. Healthcare at the end of life. This is what Dr. David Kuhl says. Is that you will spend more, the average person spends more on healthcare in the last 2 years of their lives than they do the previous 70 years combined. I want you to think about that. The average person spends more on healthcare the last 2 years of their lives than they do the previous 70 years combined. We need to have a plan with our families. Speak the truth. I don't want to be a burden, but here's what I would like. And then sit down with budgets together and look over. Here's what we need to do. And I would encourage you, some of the fondest memories I have about my first encounters with these family is that when we would go visit her grandmother's house, over in the corner sat Grandma Tolles, Dee's great-grandmother. And I watched them for the last 3 years of her life, Dee's grandmother, take care of Dee's grandmother's mother. Every day, as long as she could. And I would hear my wife say, that is the way it's supposed to be. And I would encourage you, as much as you are able, to take care of your parents. Listen, they changed your nasty diapers. You pooped all over them when you were a baby, and maybe even some of you when you were a teenager, all right? I mean, you just made a mess. You tore up things. You destroyed things. Listen, when they say to you, hey, I am 80 years old, it's okay to help them with whatever they've got going. They took care of you of 18 years. Help take care of them. Have a truthful conversation. The next thing that Dr. David Kuhl says that is needed is touch. He says the older we get, the more need for human touch we feel. The older we get, the greater the need for human touch we feel. Give them hugs. Hold their hand. Kiss them on the forehead. And then that leads to this. Along with that, what they want more than anything, if they're truthful, is they want time. That's why I encourage you, if you can, to have your parents live with you in your home as long as you can and still provide for them. Sometimes you have to out be working a job in order to provide for them, and that's why you can't keep them at home, because you have to work in order to provide for their needs. But the number one thing that parents report that they want from their children during the end of life is time. I just want you to spend time with me. So I would encourage you greatly to do that. I'm 80 years old. Listen to what I say. Have truthful conversations, just like Barzillai did. Touch. Give lots of hugs. Lots of kisses. Time. The three T's of end-of-life care. Okay? And now I want to transition, if we will, and this is with my original sermon. And this is for parents with living children. This is for the mommies and daddies in the room who have kids who are still alive. Okay? And the rest of this is for you. And we're going to look at the end of David's life. Okay? This is how David died, and this was his most important wish for his son Solomon, who was coming behind him. Let's start with this. David's sitting down. He calls Solomon in. He knows he's about to die. And he says this. He says, "And you, Solomon, my son, hear my last words to you. Know the God of your father and serve him with a whole heart and with a willing mind. For the Lord searches all hearts and he understands every plan and every thought." He says, God knows what's going on in your brain. He knows every thought you're thinking right now, Solomon. He knows every plan that you have for your life. But I want you to understand this, son. If you seek God, he will be found by you. But listen, I found this out true. It's true as well, Solomon. If you forsake him, he will cast you off forever. This is a parent's last words to his son. Seek God and you'll find him. Seek him with all your heart. Know the God of your father. This is my God. But I'm just going to tell you, son, I've learned this lesson. If you forsake God, he'll forsake you. Bad things will happen. He's not telling Solomon that he'll be going to hell if he does something he shouldn't do. He says, but listen, you will get the consequences of your decisions. I've learned this lesson, son, and it was a hard one. You don't want to learn. You don't want to do what I've done. Don't raise your hand on this, but how many of you parents have had to talk with your kid? Listen, I've gone down that road. You don't want to go there. Just about every parent in the room's had that discussion with their kids, especially their teenagers. I've done that before, son. Listen, I'm telling you, this is not the life you want to live. There's nothing to be gained from this. And that's what David is communicating as the last one. I just want you to know God and worship him. And then David's prayer with Solomon is this. He grabs Solomon, just imagine, he's grabbing Solomon by the hand and he bows his head one last time. He says, "Oh Lord, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Israel, our fathers, keep forever such purposes and thoughts in the hearts of your people and direct their hearts toward you. Grant to Solomon, my son, a whole heart that he may keep your commandments, your testimonies, and your statutes." That is his last prayer. You had his last words to his son and then his last words to his father. The last thing that he said before he goes out of this world is, "Dear Lord, keep my son, his heart turned towards you." Listen, if you've got a believing parent in here this morning or that is still alive, kids, and they really believe what this Bible says, let me tell you what, their wish for you is the same as David's wish for Solomon. All they want in this life is for you to love the Lord. And when you come to the end of the life, listen, you're lying there in bed. As an adult, you're not going to sit there thinking, "Man, I wish I would have spent more time with Johnny teaching him how to work this business. Oh, I wish I would have spent more time with Susie running her back and forth to cheerleading practice. Oh, I wish I would have just thrown a couple more pitches with him. If I could only do that." That's not what you're going to think at the end of life if you love the Lord. The one thing that you're going to want to leave to your kids when you're going on to the next life is for you to know that they're going to join you in the next life. Do you get that? That nothing, kids, listen, nothing will be more important at the end. I know because I'm at the end all the time. And people who really believe in this book, that's all they want at the end. It's all they care about. I want to know where I'm going, and I want to know where you're going. I want to know where my grandchildren are going. Now I'm going to get into preaching a little bit. You ready for this? This might be the most stupid statement I've ever heard a parent make. And I've heard a number of parents make it. Thankfully, not very many times from people in our church. Okay? This is where I try not to make eye contact with somebody. I'm gonna look at the screen. That's the way to do it. Hello to people at Ashland, all right? Here's what it is. Here's the dumbest thing I've ever heard a parent say. If you really believe in the Bible, why would you ever say, "I'm just gonna let my kid choose for themselves what they wanna believe. I'm gonna let them choose for themselves whether or not they wanna go to church. I'm gonna let them choose for themselves." I'm having a hard time not looking around. I just want them to, you know, that's up to them, and that's a personal decision they need to make. I mean, listen, who of you as parents had a 5-year-old child or even a 10-year-old child, and you're standing by a major highway and they're standing right there and just traffic just running by? At what point did any of you as parents say, "You know what, I'm just going to let you decide for yourself whether or not you want to play out there in that traffic"? Did any of you make that decision? But here's the thing, if they run out there into the traffic, they will lose their life and be gone like that. It's a bad decision, but that's it. There's no eternal consequences for that. Do you understand? But if your child doesn't choose the faith, what have you lost? Everything. And I'm just going to tell you right now, as someone who prays with people as they're getting ready to pass on, the thing that stresses parents the most, and yes, grandparents, is when they don't know whether or not their children will be with them in heaven. And sometimes they will say something to this effect: "I wish I would have done a better job sharing my faith with my kids. I wish I would have started younger. I wish I would have lived a better example." I mean, these are the regrets that people have in end of life situations. Do you hear me, church? When it comes to the end, the only thing you're going to care about is who's going to be in eternity with you and Jesus. I told my kids after all of them got saved and they started hitting their early teens. I mean, when I say early teens, like 13, maybe even 10, 11, because the younger ones heard it as I would just give it to Titus. I would say, listen, now that you're all Christians, and I really believe that you are, here's the next biggest decision you will ever make. And before I say that, what the next biggest decision you will ever make, before I say that, I got to tell you the next most important thing to me after you accepting Jesus. Someday I'm going to go to my grave and I'm going to have a bunch of grandkids. And I want y'all to have a lot of kids. And the most important thing to me is going to be whether or not my grandbabies will be with me in heaven. I'm just telling you right now, Titus. I'm telling you right now, Jonna. I'm telling you right now, Lucas. There won't be anything else that I'm worried about on my deathbed other than whether or not my grandbabies and my great-grandbabies will be with me with Jesus forever. And nothing could break my heart more than to think of them in hell apart from me and to go to my grave not knowing, or worse yet, knowing that possibly they've rejected the faith. Not my faith, but the faith of the scriptures. Nothing will mean more to you, moms and dads. You don't go to pray with somebody every month as they're passing on to eternity. I'm telling you what, people who really believe what in this book says. Now, if you don't really believe it, sure, then you say, whatever the kids want to work out, that's fine. It's all a crapshoot. It's a lottery. Who knows? If that's what you believe, fine, take that path. But if you really believe that there's a heaven to gain and a hell to shun, everything in you should just say, I've got to pass on this faith to my kids. It's all you're going to care about. And so I say to my kids, here's the next most important decision that you're going to make. Is I need you to marry somebody who loves the Lord as well. Because the best odds of my grandkids and my great-grandkids going to heaven are as if you marry someone who also loves Jesus. And if you marry someone who doesn't love Jesus, what will that tell your kids about how much you value your love of Jesus? Don't make this mistake. This is why, as a pastor, and the scripture says it, I will not do a wedding between two people who do not believe. What does a believer have to do with an unbeliever? It is the, I'm not saying it's easy decision, but it's the clearest decision when it comes to marriage. If I have two people and one of them does believe and one of them doesn't, no way. Because I know it's setting up for pain, because the offspring of those marriages will have confused kids. What do they value? So I look all my kids in the eye and I tell them regularly, if you want to break my heart, you bring somebody home that doesn't love the Lord. If you want to break your mother's heart, you marry somebody that doesn't love Jesus, because that tells me I've got about a 50-50 shot of having my grandkids with me in heaven. Please. Grant to Solomon, my son, a whole heart that he may keep your commandments, your testimonies, and your statutes. I want you to be with me forever. And I wish this not only because it's my wish, not because it should be ever a parent's greatest wish, because this is God's greatest wish as well. Paul writes in 1 Timothy 2. Spoken like a parent whose heart breaks every time someone dies rejecting him. And you can get into all your theologies and election and predestination and free will and all that, but I'm just telling you, listen to what this one verse says about our loving God. God desires all people to be saved and to come to a knowledge of the truth. He doesn't want one child, not one grandchild, not one great-grandchild, not one great-grandchild to live apart from him forever. It's not his wish. He desires all people to be saved. So I share this with you on this Mother's Day, as we look at David's very last words. This is all I want. Moms and dads, communicate to your kids. This is all I want. I just want you to love Jesus. I want your spouse to love Jesus. I want my grandbabies to love Jesus. And I want us to all be in heaven together forever, giving Jesus the worship he deserves.